passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED lights, and more, whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, May the 22nd, 2022. It's 5-2-2-2-2. And today on the program, we don't know where Chris Gullo is. He connected. He was here earlier today. He showed up to the broadcast. He arrived at the WrestleNomics studio. He was informed of his participation in today's broadcast, but subsequent to that, he summarily and unprofessionally walked out. His action disappointed dozens and dozens of WrestleNomics listeners, and quite frankly, he should be ashamed of himself. Here he is. Here he is. What do you have to say for yourself?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you well. Are you ready to apologize for your unprofessional conduct?
I can only blame Hewlett-Packard.
I'm keeping you in this little screen, too. For those watching on YouTube, Gullo's laptop failed. He is now in a small mobile device-sized box. Portrait, not landscape. But nonetheless, the show must go on. We must persevere against these challenges. And we will talk about... What are we going to talk about? You sound okay, actually. What are we going to talk about today? Do you remember?
Yeah, we'll have to talk about Stephanie McMahon taking a leave of absence from WWE. We're also going to discuss the upfronts this week, and of course the walkout, as well as a few other topics and subjects.
I have some breaking news right now that just came through my ear. Your merchandise on the WrestleNomics website has been canceled. No more merchandise for you. Thank you.
All references to me will be deleted.
Yes. Have you watched Succession yet on HBO Max?
I have not. I know you've been telling me to watch it.
Shame on you.
But you say it's very McMahon-ish.
We may make some comparisons today to it. If people want to send in a super chat, how do they do that, Chris Gullo?
All right, so there in a little YouTube, you'll see there's a little dollar sign. You can ask a question and put whatever monetary value that you believe is proficient for that question. Any questions are fair game when it comes to the wrestling business.
Yes, we may or may not answer them if they are inappropriate questions, but if they are appropriate questions, we will do our best. So where would you like to start today?
All right, so I do not have the slideshow up now, of course.
Can you see this?
I can see this.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, that should be fine.
So, yeah, we are going to start with the news that Stephanie McMahon, I know this because I looked at the slides before, is taking a bath. So this is what she said on Twitter. As of tomorrow, I'm taking leave of absence from the majority of my responsibilities at WWE. WWE is a lifelong legacy for me, and I look forward to returning to the company that I love after taking this time to focus on my family.
Yes. So this happened on Thursday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern. Notably, that may coincidentally or not, that is 30 minutes after the New York Stock Exchange closed. Closes at 4. This was a couple days after the network upfronts for Fox and NBC Universal, a very important event that we'll talk about in a little bit more depth later, that has to do with the network showing all of its great content to advertisers, showing them what the upcoming season is going to look like for television. So she is leaving temporarily leaving WWE. I'm told by WWE that she's expected back. Presumably, this is more than just, you know, 2 weeks. She's not just taking 2 weeks of vacation off here. I would think that she, you know, she's a McMahon family member, so I don't know if she ever goes on vacation, but presumably employees are earning something like a two weeks of vacation per week. I think that's in Nick Khan's contract that we've seen, which has been disclosed. So who knows how long she'll be out for. The reasons that I've been given is that it's just that she's been working for a really long time. Paul Levesque's health issues, which were disclosed in September, caused her to reassess. Paul Levesque retired as a wrestler, publicly in March, just before WrestleMania. Paul Levesque is back to working full time. He's not overseeing NXT in Orlando, but he's back to working full time as an executive. He is still an executive vice president for WWE. He participated in the annual shareholders meeting on Thursday, the same day that this was announced by Stephanie. He participated. This meeting was at 1 p.m. This was not open to the public, but it was open to shareholders. SlamWrestling.com has a report from someone who tuned in virtually to the shareholders meeting and noted that Paul Levesque was participating in that shareholders meeting. So he's around. It's not as if he's leaving here, too. You don't get that indication at all. Employees, maybe some new, but many of them learned about Stephanie McMahon's leave of absence when she tweeted it. She also shared the same message on LinkedIn. For what it's worth, she's removed her work history from LinkedIn, which previously, I believe, had all of her, you know, her various positions and the timeline of her various positions with WWE. What do you think is happening here, Chris Gallo? She just wants to take off time. Take some time off. She has never really had a real break, maybe. Certainly, she's been working hard for a long time.
I think the big thing, though, with that is why is she taking the break? Then we talked when the news came out that maybe she realizes it's not going to totally be her company. I mean, this looks to be set up that Nick Khan would possibly be the chairman once Vince is passed.
Well,
and
if I could be pedantic for a moment, we chairman, so we always call Vince the chairman of the board and CEO. So you could have a chairman who's one person and a CEO who's another person. The chairman just refers to a position on the board of directors. By the way, I should note that Stephanie, I've been told, is remaining a member of the board of directors. She has been a member of the board of directors since 2015. Paul Levesque has been as well. What happens at the annual shareholders meeting is that there are elected member, or there are candidates who are nominated to be members of the board of directors. It's basically a formality. There's 12 of them who were disclosed in the proxy statement that came out in April, including some new members. But Stephanie and Paul were nominated. They were all approved. They did publish an 8K on Friday about that. I mean, we can bump ahead here to see who has the voting power. Vince McMahon is basically deciding this. He has 80% of the votes, so it's a formality. Whatever he wants is going to happen, even if everybody else votes the other way. His vote is really the only one that matters, is the only one that's going to decide anything. Because, oh my God. Okay, moving on. So Vince has about a third of the shares. Because he's got preferred class, he gets 10x voting power. He controls over 80% of the shares, depending on, I don't know if diluted share discrepancy to basic share discrepancy comes into play here. But anyway, Stephanie owns 2.5% of all WWE shares. She has preferred class of shares, too, because she's a McMahon family member. She's a descendant of Vince and Linda. Paul doesn't get preferred class of shares. Shane used to have them. Shane liquidated all of his stock. Linda has a relatively small amount as well. She has less than 1% of the company. So that gives Stephanie about 5% of the voting power. But, you know, as I said, Vince controls the company. Some have speculated that, well, maybe she's going to follow in Linda's footsteps and get into politics, run for office. FEC records don't show Stephanie making any contributions to political campaigns since 2015. So I would be surprised if that's the case. But we can look back at, I think it would be informative to look back at some moments in history that I want to call out over the last, geez, almost 20 years of Stephanie's rise in the corporate structure of WWE and other family members, events around other family members as well. I remember when I was watching WWF Raw as a teenager in the Attitude Era, and Stephanie McMahon suddenly became a character on television. Shane had been a character on television to that time. Of course, he'd been a referee, and he'd been, you know, you could find him in some library footage going way back. But Stephanie shows up as an on-screen character. She had worked as a model in merchandising, of course, and I think she had even worked as a receptionist for WWE. But anyway, in 2006, after working in creative for a number of years, I think already to that point, she was promoted to Senior Vice President of Creative Writing. That was her title. And then in November 2007, she was promoted to Executive Vice President. Something I noticed today just in researching, just doing some last-minute research that I wasn't aware of. In December 2008, Bruce Pritchard was fired from WWE. So that's, we may be familiar, people listening are probably familiar. Bruce Pritchard had done his podcast in recent years, and but now is back in WWE. But in December 2008, Bruce Pritchard was fired from WWE, reportedly by Stephanie McMahon. Keep that in mind. Shane leaves WWE as a corporate executive. No, Shane is not. Yes, Shane returned as a performer, but has only been a performer. Perhaps he was also a producer, effectively, de facto, at times. But he has not returned to a corporate role since he left at the very end of 2009. That also aligns with the timing that Linda left the company to run for U.S. Senate twice, which she did not win either time, of course. And then during that time, you get Paul Levesque's wrestling career winding down and him wrestling less often and him becoming more of a corporate officer in the company, going from executive senior advisor to executive vice president by 2011. So the Stephanie and Triple H power starts to rise in the company. You get Shane moving out of the way. It's not clear to me what the relationship is like. It's fascinating. I don't want to go too far in inventing theories, but we did hear Shane he did an interview several years ago, just after he returned as a performer in 2016. He did one of those interviews with Mick Foley on the network, where there's this awkward moment where, you know, Mick asks him what his relationship is like with Paul, and he goes, "Oh, it's fine," and it has a very short answer. It leaves me to wonder what that relationship is really like, and just imagine, I'm imagining holidays in the McMahon household. But anyway, Shane is out. Somebody like Bruce Pritchard is out. I don't know if that's a big deal, but he's somebody who was with the company. Bruce Pritchard was for a very long time. He leaves the company. Shane leaves the company. And if nothing else, I would think that leads more power to be absorbed by Paul Levesque and Stephanie, who of course are married. In December 2013, at the end of the year, Stephanie is named to her current title, Chief Brand Officer. Then we flash forward to some 6 years later, maybe 5.5 years later, and Bruce Pritchard, after doing Something to Wrestle With and doing lots of impressions of Vince McMahon on podcasts. I by the way, I just want to condemn anybody who does Vince McMahon impressions on their podcast, by the way. Anyway, he returns to WWE. sort of taking over those roles that Eric Bischoff and Paul Heyman were originally appointed to for a short time, less than a year prior. So that happens. Bruce Pritchard returns to some power in WWE August 2020. Nick Khan becomes the president and chief revenue officer. And by September 2021, NXT 2.0 is relaunched just after WWE discloses that Paul Levesque had a cardiac event. He since went on ESPN with Stephen A. Smith and talked about the health issues that he was having. That brings us to this month, where Stephanie announces that she's taking a leave of absence. Again, I'm told that she'll be back eventually, but I don't know. Nobody knows when, or at least we don't know when. So that's all happening. I think part of what's happening, at least to Triple H, is that if you look back to, I guess we could you know, look back at this timeline that people can see on the screen of the early 2010s, where the Stephanie and Paul Levesque duo gain more power, and then there's fewer people around them who would seem to have that power, including Bruce Pritchard going away, Shane McMahon going away, even Linda, to whatever that matters, going away. And then as we get more towards the present, you know, NXT doesn't turn out to be as successful on the USA Network as they would like. It doesn't beat Dynamite in the ratings. It doesn't apparently get an upgrade in TV rights value that they had probably hoped that it got. And Paul Levesque falls from power. Perhaps there are political machinations that benefit from Paul Levesque losing power, including the likes of Bruce Pritchard, Kevin Dunn, John Laurinaitis, Johnny Ace returning to a talent relations role. So all of that happening as perhaps power shifting. So any thoughts before we move forward here?
Yeah, I was going to bring up, I don't even know if you have it handy, but she definitely talked less this last quarterly conference call than the previous couple, didn't she? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And that's an important thing to note, is that Stephanie has been participating, especially since the exit of George Barrios and Michelle Wilson. Something we can note too, you know, pretty important executives, the second and third most important executives in WWE until January 2020, they leave WWE. And part of what happened there is, yes, they put Nick Khan in the second most important role. He becomes president of the company. But I think, you know, Stephanie really took over. So, I mean, her title is chief brand officer, but it's sort of another way of saying chief marketing officer. She took a lot of the vacuum that was left by Michelle Wilson. And it, you know, 2020 and forward coincides with the elevation of her in terms of at least participating in earnings calls. And I imagine that indicates something broader also. But I do think you're right. I am... it'll take me a second to look it up, but I do think you're right that she talked somewhat less, but I wouldn't say it stood out to me as meaningful, but
there also wasn't many exciting things for her. Like the previous conference calls, the zombies and all this other stuff that she's really bragged about. She didn't have any like memorable comments this past conference call, which means her excitement was probably not where it normally is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't put a ton of stock into that, but it's plausible to me that maybe she knew that she was going to take a leave of absence at that time and just get through the earnings call, which was on May 5th, get through the upfronts, which are very important, and I'm sure she plays an important role in that as the chief brand officer and all the relationships with advertisers and networks. So I think we can share this. This is a stacked column chart that shows the breakdown of the percentage of words that anybody on the W earnings calls says, just using the transcripts. And she spoke 12% of the words, and you know, that was less than the last two times, but not out of the range of what she usually says. I think it was just a less newsworthy earnings call than in the past. But there's that. So how do I get rid of this? There we go. So what I could speculate might be happening here is if you look at the value of WWE's TV rights currently, especially considering not just average annual value, which is what we talk about often, right? $205 million for SmackDown, $265 million for Raw, $200 million for the network content on Peacock. That's the U.S. value for a year over the course of the term of the contract. And each one of those contracts is 5 years long. Raw and SmackDown are aligned. They start and expire at the same time. Peacock will expire about a year and a half later or so, in, I believe, March 2026. Over the five-year course of those contracts, that's a value of about $3.4 billion just for the U.S. rights. We talked about a few weeks ago, I laid out all the reasons, all the math behind why AEW and WWE will probably get an increase. And I would put the baseline expectation for what WWE can get in its next round of US TV rights fees at about 1.5 times what they currently get. So if we take all, and let's throw Peacock in here too. Maybe you can make an argument that Peacock would be different, I don't know. But let's put Peacock in here too and assume that Peacock is perhaps due for a 1.5x increase as well. So we end up with what's currently worth, over the course of 5 years, $3.4 billion, ends up being worth $5 billion, perhaps, in the next term of deals. That's a lot of money. And if you're NBC Universal or whatever TV partner that might want these rights, these rights for sports are really important, but also getting really expensive. And it's sort of like renting a home versus owning a home. As I am sometimes reminded, and you're already ahead of the game here, Chris Gall.
Yes.
Why continue to rent a home when you can own one? And you can own that equity and maybe eventually sell it rather than just paying money to a landlord that just goes away. WWE is kind of the landlord in this situation. These networks license the content, and then they have to renew it every several years. So $5 billion could be what these major WWE rights are worth in the next term, which, let's assume it's another five-year deal, that would run from the end of 2014 through the end of 2029, so the rest of the decade. $5 billion, and as people can see on the screen, that's more than the current market capitalization of WWE as a company. What's market cap?
That is the total like value of the company with all its assets, isn't it? Is that what I'm correct?
It's the total value of all the shares based on the current share price, which is as simple as the number of shares shifts for some reason that accountants could explain to us. There's about 75 million shares at any given time in WWE. If you just multiply that by the current share price, which as of the close of the market on Friday is about $60, you get about $4.5 billion. So if I'm NBC Universal, let's cut to the chase here. If I'm NBC Universal, I don't want to renew licensing of Raw and of Peacock. I would rather just own the content. I would rather just own the company and then not have to worry about renewing my lease on my apartment every few years and just own my house and then use my house, and I can remodel my house however I want. I can do whatever I want to it and not have to worry about what the landlord thinks of it. You know, Fox owns SmackDown. NBCU doesn't own SmackDown, but maybe there's some place for me to put SmackDown. It's helpful, at least to a potential acquirer of WWE, that Fox, the Fox deal for SmackDown expires at the same time. So I don't know where that would fit in NBC Universal's world. I haven't given that a lot of thought, where SmackDown could go, but obviously NBC Universal, not that long ago, owned these rights, and I don't know, there's probably not something that's a better strategy on Friday night on USA Network, or they used to be on Tuesday night, which is where NXT is right now. I don't know where NXT ends up, if this is a scenario that in any way approaches reality in the next several years. I'm teetering. I'm looking over the edge here, Chris Gallo, and I might be joining you here in this theory that maybe WWE is going to be acquired. Now, when it happens is not going to be until these deals are being discussed, which maybe they're being discussed now. And maybe they're starting to be discussed now. I believe that these are long negotiations. This is not one meeting. This is a long-term negotiation.
So would you think 2024 is the deadline for a sale, you think?
I think a new deal, whether it's the acquisition of WWE or a new deal for TV rights, gets announced about a year and a half. If history is any indication, we learn about it about a year and a half in advance of the deal actually expiring. These deals, the Raw and SmackDown deals, expire at the end of September 2024. So about a year and a half before that would be the spring of 2023. About a year from now, 1 year from now, start the countdown. So that's when we would learn, and who knows how long it would take them. I don't have the knowledge to tell you about how long it would take to close and complete a sale of WWE, but it would take some time. So it wouldn't be instant, but maybe the strategy is being clarified for WWE that, to be clear, this is purely speculation on my part. Maybe the strategy is beginning to be clarified for WWE that it just makes a lot more sense to, if not NBC Universal, I think NBC Universal by far is the one it makes the most sense for, and we can discuss why. But maybe the strategy is being clarified that we're going to sell the company. And if I'm Stephanie McMahon, I don't know if that's what I want. You know, maybe I've worked for decades here at trying to become an important leader in the company. I want to lead the company and become CEO someday, maybe. That's not great news for me. So maybe I'm just saying, well, I'm just going to take a leave of absence for a while. Maybe that's what's happening here. I don't know. But that's what makes a lot of sense to a network. Maybe NBC Universal. Do you think there are other players that would want to acquire WWE?
I mean, obviously everyone throws Disney out there for the intellectual property. We've seen Disney acquire a lot of the non-traditional stuff, you know, including all the Fox Studios purchases and all that. I mean, Disney, you got to put Disney out there. You know, I mean, it's more sports content for ESPN, but I can't see Fox buying the whole thing. It just, something tells me it just wouldn't happen.
I have not prepared research for this, but they did sell a lot of assets to Disney, so maybe they have some money to spend, but I don't know. I think NBC Universal makes the most sense. You could maybe Disney, and just like TV rights, it's important to have many bidders when you're trying to sell any asset, I suppose. So for WWE's sake and for the price that they can run up on the sale of their company, if that's what they're doing,
Fang wouldn't buy it, right?
It was suggested to somebody casually, just a friend, not anybody in the wrestling business, that would Netflix want to buy it? And I don't think so, because I think it makes more sense for NBCU, because NBCU is so deeply invested in this content already. If they lost WWE content, they would have to replace it with something. And as we've discussed before, wrestling is pretty cheap content for the viewership that it delivers. Maybe the ad rates are not as great as, I'm sure the ad rates are not as good as other live sports, but it's pretty cheap content relative to scripted programming, at least. And NBC Universal owns theme parks. Netflix does not own theme parks. Fox, to my knowledge, does not own theme parks. And we heard Nick Khan discuss kind of poo-poo the Universal Studios in an interview recently. Who was he talking to? Do you remember? Who did he do an interview with recently where he discussed?
It was Ariel Helwani before WrestleMania?
No, Ariel, but I forget. There was an interview, and I'm sure we discussed it at the time, where he talked about sort of the lack of IP that is at Universal Studios. But imagine if there were WWE attractions at Universal Studios. So I think there's a fit there, not just in terms of the deep investment that NBC Universal has already made in WWE content, and there's a useful application for theme parks here. Assuming this is the right way to look at this, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, but Comcast, which is the parent company of NBC Universal, has $8.7 billion on their balance sheet in cash. So that's almost twice as much as the market capital of WWE. So what I'm getting to here is that WWE or Comcast could probably afford this pretty comfortably. Now, who would have to decide this is Brian Roberts, the Comcast CEO, perhaps Jeff Shell, the NBC Universal CEO. They would have a lot to say about whether or not this is going to happen, if it's even happening. Again, purely speculation on our part here. So, Lightshed on their podcast this week mentioned, and this is new information to me, that Brian Roberts was hesitant about acquiring the WWE content for Peacock. But nonetheless, that seems to have worked out very well for them, or at least very well for WWE. So there's an image of Jeff Shell hanging out with Dwayne and XFL owner Dwayne Johnson. So we'll see what happens. Does this sound plausible to you, first of all?
I mean, we've talked about it before, that they just, it just makes the most fit. You know, why you just brought up earlier in this show, why keep paying for this when you can own it? The amount of money that they're putting out to WWE, and the theme park idea, like it, we've also heard that rumor for years that the Hall of Fame would be on Universal City Walk. Well, I'm sure if NBC Universal actually bought it, they would put it in City Walk, and then you'd also could have the Rock ride and the Steve Austin ride, and I think it would be a lot of lazy. Because MJ put in the chat, imagine if there was a Sasha and Naomi ride right now. I think it would be a lot of legacy, like wrestlers having rides or
the John Cena You Can't See Me ride and so forth, yeah. and things of that nature. Thank you, MJ from NJ, for the blank 99-cent super chat. We appreciate it. So I think that's all really had to say about the Stephanie story for now. And any other questions or things to add here? As far as studios, it makes a lot of sense to license it, and that has very much become the strategy ever since Nick Khan has joined the company, the licensing the content from the network rather than direct to consumer to a big player who can afford to pay you more for it than you can monetize for it yourself, and all these incremental deals that they're making on everything. I don't know why lottery tickets always comes to mind for me, but it often does. They've made a scratch-off lottery ticket deal, but the trading cards with the Fanatics deal and things like that.
The only thing we won't ponder it here, but like, what does Stephanie do next if she left the company? I know we had a lot of fun when we talked about Triple H, if people, yes. Paul Levesque leaving the company. That might be an interesting bonus episode or something. Like, what can Stephanie do? I have some ideas that she'd probably be very good at.
Yeah, just to anticipate some wrestling fan speculation, let's call it. Are they going to start a new wrestling company? I highly doubt it. No. I guess they could if they wanted to. They were probably in a pretty good position to do that. If Stephanie wanted to liquidate all of her stock, it's worth about $116 million. That's good starting money, I guess. They undoubtedly have a lot of relationships with people that they could get, useful meetings with people if they wanted to do that. I'm sure, though, that they have a non-compete agreement that would keep them from doing anything for probably at least a year. If that's not part of their employment agreement, then it's probably part of their agreement when they became members of the board of directors. I would not expect. I mean, it makes. I see Triple H, I guess, as more of a wrestling guy. I see Stephanie as more likely to not do something in wrestling. I doubt politics. Maybe philanthropy. She certainly made a lot of connections and has done a lot of work through WWE community and things like that.
I think TV and film too. Being involved with maybe a studio or something might be good for her, especially the way she is with marketing and branding.
Yeah, it's not out of the question to see her emerge as a chief marketing officer for a media or entertainment company. But hey, I mean the line for now is that she's going to be back. So we'll see what happens.
Um, Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Moving on. Have you been following the news of the upfronts, Chris Gallo?
A little bit. I'll get a lot through my feed, especially a lot of this is probably one of the first upfronts with all these networks that there isn't a lot of superhero shows, so I'm getting a lot of stuff on that theme for me there. But yeah, I am following a little bit of what we heard with, as far as WWE and AEW with the upfronts.
The biggest wrestling star at the Warner Brothers Discovery upfront was which AEW star?
There wasn't any, was there?
There wasn't one. The biggest wrestling star at the Warner Brothers Discovery up front was this man. I can't put the mouse on him, I guess, but there he is. If you look, he's well to Shaq's right. It's John Cena, who appeared to promote the Wipeout series and some other superhero. What is he? What is that superhero role that he plays?
Peacemaker,
thank you. But here we have this photo with Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav of Cost Discipline fame in the center, posing with all of these stars. We've got Shaq, of course. He stands out as the tallest. We've got Grant Hill here. We've got Anderson Cooper. We've got who's the guy who moved from Fox News to CNN recently? I forget his name. We've got Wayne Gretzky. We've got Kelly from The Office. What's her name? Mandy.
Mindy Kaling.
Mindy Kaling. See, I'm exposing myself as a media expert here. But a lot of people from a lot of different properties that Warner Brothers Discovery has the licensing rights to. And no AEW. Now, this was on a Wednesday when they were taping Dynamite in Houston. But nonetheless, if they wanted somebody to be there, as important as this is, I'm sure AEW could have sent someone. Dave Meltzer has reported, and I've heard similar, that there was a lot of back and forth in terms of how much AEW expected that they were going to be participating in this upfront. There was a moment where, you know, in the video they show this lineup of what's happening Monday through Sunday, and we've got Steph Curry representing the NBA. We've got... What's this guy's name from Chopped, who used to be on Queer Eye?
You know, I always forget his name. Yeah,
Ted.
Ted. Why am I thinking Ted Levine?
Anyway, we got Red Velvet. Red Velvet representing AEW. According to Tony Maglio, there was a moonsault as well, a clip of a moonsault from AEW content. Anderson Cooper representing CNN, somebody from Gold Rush here, somebody from Love It or List It, and some two people from 90 Day Fiancé. That's your favorite show, right?
I have actually friends in the wrestling business that love that show. It's a lot of drama.
So, and we talked about this. We haven't talked about this on WrestleNomics Radio proper, but we did talk about this on the Who's a Draw live stream, because the news had just broken that Bret Weitz is soon to be the former. I think he said it was happening in 14 days, and maybe, I don't know if 14 days have gone by yet, but the former, if not already, you know, the soon-to-be, if not already, former general manager of the TNets, TNT, TBS, and True TV, he is out as part of this merger. We originally believed that he was going to stay with Warner Brothers Discovery. But news breaking that he's not. He's leaving the company. What does that mean for AEW's relationship with Warner Brothers Discovery? Remains to be seen. One person at AEW told me that it won't make any difference. It's not concerning. But it remains to be seen what that's going to mean. I mean, we certainly saw little participation in this up front. Nobody in person representing AEW. And in the past, there has been what you were gonna say.
I was gonna ask, was it Cody last year?
I don't know about last year, but memorably, Dynamite was introduced at the 2019 Warner Media up front with there's some memorable pictures out there of Tony Khan and all the EVPs all standing together. Britt Baker in there too, Brandi Rhodes in there too, and people like that. I should have looked this up. I think maybe Rampage had been announced at the previous up front. Could be maybe Rhodes to the top as well. So there's that. But at the NBC Universal up front, we've got the real champions of WWE here, The Miz and Bianca Belair. People that WWE certainly sees and the networks certainly see as the major stars here. The Miz, of course, is not just on Raw, but he's also on Miz and Mrs. So there's that. And then we had Roman Reigns, and I couldn't find any pictures of Charlotte at the upfronts, but there's Roman Reigns at the Fox upfronts. Acknowledge him. He was we acknowledged him as more than anyone else in April 2022, to make this as narrow as possible. More than anyone else, a draw. Even Chris Scullo admits it now. So there we have it. It's notable, too, that according to that Deadline article that we discussed last week, not just Fox Sports handling the ad sales for SmackDown, but now NBC Sports handling the sales, the ad sales, for Raw. So it's official. WWE is a sport again. True?
I mean, not in WWE's eyes.
Coincidentally, on the same day as the upfronts for Fox and NBC, which I believe was Tuesday, WWE's counsel, Kane L. Gates, put out, I forget what the name of this document is, reply to opposition, I think. Another iteration of their argument against MLW. MLW, if you're just catching up, in January filed a lawsuit against WWE, alleging antitrust violation, alleging, among other things, that WWE interfered with a deal with Fox-owned ad-supported streaming service Tubi. MLW and Tubi purportedly were about to close the deal until, allegedly, Stephanie McMahon, this all ties together, until allegedly, according to MLW, Stephanie McMahon intervened and pressured Tubi to cancel the deal. That is what MLW alleges. So they've been going back and forth, referencing a lot of case law that I'm not equipped to explain and get into, but we can read this part of their argument that they filed this past week. I don't suppose you can see this, can you, Gullo?
Yeah, no, I can't. I'm sorry.
I will.
Sorry for the technical difficulties, everybody, by the way.
Yeah, you've disappointed us all today, Gullo, with your summarily unprofessional behavior. MLW's attempt to cast professional wrestling as a sport, quote-unquote, with scare quotes, quote-unquote sport, is not only clearly outside the four corners of its own complaint, it is also wholly inaccurate. First, plaintiffs that define a relevant market around sports and sports leagues do so by alleging facts, it's in italics, demonstrating that the sport product has no adequate substitutes through references to cross-elasticity of demand. You remember when Idris, what was his role in The Wire? Stringer Bell. Stringer Bell taught us about elasticity of demand. Anyway, returning to the complaint. Second, and more importantly, MLW fails to allege facts to support its assertion that scripted professional wrestling is a sport because no such facts exist. Professional wrestling is a scripted drama, not a sport. It has as much in common with an actual sport as the Rocky films have with actual boxing. Indeed, based on the facts alleged in the complaint alone, the market dynamics of professional wrestling are fundamentally different from those of a sport. For example, the U.S. has only one professional basketball league, the NBA. Although The NBA generates tremendous revenues. No other league even attempts to compete. Here, MLW alleges that multiple companies such as WWE, MLW, AEW, and Impact Wrestling all compete to sell broadcast rights to the same group of purchasers. This dynamic is consistent with the sale of general entertainment programming and not sports programming. Thoughts and analysis, Chris Cullen?
I'm surprised they haven't even got themselves out of, like, put themselves in such a general bubble of the competing thing. It's like, you know, we are not in the same market as MLW. We're in the same market as Marvel movies and
as zombie films,
you know, and news shows.
This is something that they've argued previous to this, is that they're more akin to general entertainment. So why come after us? So I thought it was, you know, somewhat contradictory. I don't know that it undermines their legal argument here that they're making, but somewhat contradictory in just the perception of me anyway, that you're having the network's sports departments are now overseeing the ad sales of your two most important weekly shows, while you're arguing that you're not sports. There's clearly some obviously it is a predetermined program. But it is sports-like, for what that's worth. I did do some research this week on... This is something I've quizzed you on in the past, Gullo, is that where do the networks get their money from? And we obsess over the demo for good reason. But actually, these TV networks get the majority of their revenue from carriage fees to your cable or satellite carrier. Or your vMVPD carrier, if you're like me and you subscribe to something like Sling. And what we have here is I went into the AT&T filings, I went into the Comcast filings, and I think just preparing myself perhaps for I was thinking about this on a drive home after the Stephanie news, and like, man, if NBC Universal acquires WWE, you know what's going to happen? We're not going to have WWE earnings calls anymore. And what am I going to do with my life?
This could be a very small factor of the...
This would be bad for me. This is bad for us, Gullo. We shouldn't want WWE to be acquired. We want WWE to be an independent company, because the more that the entirety of your business is WWE, the more information and, you know, needs to be disclosed, because more of it is material. But anyway, if WWE, just to get sidetracked for a second, if WWE ends up getting acquired by a much larger company. I mean, think like Endeavor. I don't even look at the Endeavor filings, but I imagine there's very little UFC information. There's probably some, but not that much UFC information in there. UFC is owned by Endeavor.
We hardly ever knew anything about Ring of Honor because there was such a byline on Sinclair. Yeah.
And
it's a little...
That might be comparable by proportion. You know, I don't know. I would have to think about it. But Sinclair... I believe Sinclair's market cap is in the realm of WWE. I think, you know, a few billion dollars in market cap. So, yeah, Ring of Honor to Sinclair might be similar in proportion as WWE to Comcast, but I would have to think about that. So, Warner Media still gets the majority of its revenue from subscription fees, what they call subscription fees, which is within what they now call the Basic Networks line of reporting that was formerly called the Turner Business Unit, which appears to include TNT, TBS, True TV, but also CNN, HBO Max, and a load of other things, a load of other networks. Notable that WarnerMedia does not own a major broadcast network such as NBC, CBS, Fox, and things like that. It's mostly cable. Yes, they own half of CW, but CW is by far the least watched major English language broadcast network. I would venture to guess that the Spanish language broadcast networks blows away CW. But anyway. So still the majority of the revenue for this was still called Warner Media at the time. This is the most recent report that AT&T put out. Yes, so still subscriber fees, carriage fees, affiliate fees, whatever you want to call them, accounting for 60%, the majority of Warner Media's Turner units, basic networks revenue. Advertising accounting for 33%, that is one third, and then 7% in other, which is probably largely licensing of content. And then I looked at the NBC, what is called the NBC Universal Media line of reporting within Comcast's reporting. So they used to break out cable separate from broadcast. No more. This is all in one. So we don't get that separation. But when it's all together, we end up with 45% in distribution revenue, which I read to mean carriage fees, affiliate fees, subscriber fees, whatever you want to call them, and then 47% in advertising revenue. So about a 50-50 split, another 8% in the other category. I speculate that that's skewed by NBC broadcast network. Sports TV ratings on Twitter pointed out to me that they think that maybe this has to do with NBC not being as aggressive when it comes to negotiating carriage fees, because Comcast is their parent company, so they don't want to drive up the demand, the price of what they themselves are having to pay for. So that certainly seems plausible. But anyway, I guess that the point remains, even without parsing it further from what we see here, that subscriber fees are at least as much of a factor in television as advertising is. When it comes to how we read the ratings, this is how I've always pointed to to say, I don't know, maybe P2 Plus does matter because it represents subscribers and it represents a bigger, or at least as big, of a piece of the TV economy as advertising does. So there's that. But perhaps you could make an argument at the demo to say, well, the demo represents a younger demographic, represents a demographic that's going to be around longer and subscribing longer, perhaps. But anyway, there's that. And I just put this is what I want my new backsplash to be here. Have I ever shown you an image like this, Gallo?
I think maybe once, but not this. Like, I've seen the little block dots, but maybe not this intense.
What we have here is a visual representation of the top 5,000 programs over the last roughly 365 days. So I've included here not just the Showbiz data, not just the cable originals, not just the broadcast primetime, English language broadcast primetime. Someone pointed out to me that I've been leaving out, because we don't have access to the data, or at least I don't know where to get it, the Spanish language broadcast data, which is quite substantial. And it also includes, from ratingsryan.com, the reruns. So this is including the top 200 weekly reruns that now wrap around for a full year in the data that I've collected from ratingsryan.com. So this is just about 1 year. Anyway, Gullo has disappeared. Oh, there he is. Okay. You're making a lot of noise. I'm putting it on mute. What we've got here is a representation of where the major wrestling programs land in that top 5,000 scope. So if you're watching on YouTube, you just start at the top left and you count down. That's the first 50, and then you go left to right from there. And then we start to see some blue dots about a third of the way through this 5,000 list. And then we get to some red dots. The red dots overlap somewhat with the blue dots. And then we get to some gray dots that overlap somewhat with the red dots. The blue dots, of course, represent SmackDown, which, being on Fox, is the most watched wrestling program that there is, followed by Raw, followed by Dynamite. And then we do see two instances of Rampage here, too. By the way, this is 18 to 49. This is not total viewership. But we do see two instances of Rampage appearing. The high instance of Rampage is right in the middle of the SmackDown and the Raw. And I'm not sure, but I'm almost certain that that's the CM Punk debut episode. And then we've got one back here. I don't know what the date is on it, but it lands in the back end of where the Dynamite squares show up. So there's that. Just to illustrate, look, wrestling is still quite popular. The NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball, are very highly ranked. But wrestling is quite valuable also. And the more highly ranked you are, the more valuable you are. So there's that. So are you situated now?
Yeah, I was just seeing if I can somehow reboot, if the computer would turn on now and it still wouldn't.
Okay. So have you seen, Golo, that the stadium shows are now on sale for WWE?
Yes, and these posters are quite interesting. They're almost indie flair, but also WCW 1993 flair too.
Okay. Tremendous job here by the WWE graphics team. So we've got Money in the Bank on sale, SummerSlam on sale, Clash of the Castle on sale. These are the latest numbers according to WrestleTix. We've got over 19,000 tickets distributed as of last count in Las Vegas at Allegiant Stadium, the home of SummerSlam last year. SummerSlam this year is in Nashville. Over 22,000 tickets out as of the last count by WrestleTix. And then Clash of the Castle, I understand tickets have been priced pretty high, but according to WrestleTix, over 53,000 tickets already out. So that's going to be an enormous gate, I think. They've priced tickets high, and tickets have not sold out, but they have sold 53,000 of them. So I have to think that that's going to be...
How many tickets are available for that one?
I don't know. I know that WrestleTix has pointed out that this is not a Ticketmaster map. This is a map that's harder to pull data out of. We'll probably get a better idea as the event draws nearer. When it comes to capacity, the capacity changes all the time, right? Like for example, the Forbidden Door show, which is at United Center in Chicago in June. The capacity for that has definitely changed over time. You know, tickets were mostly sold out right away, and they've made more tickets available. It appears that they're reducing the stage and putting more tickets in the back of the arena that would normally be blocked off by a stage. So the capacity the capacity can change just because the production gets finalized and they realize what tickets that previously were held off just in case, now those tickets can be available, or the configuration itself, as in the case of Forbidden Door, could change. Or what I think happens is that they just don't put all the tickets on, especially if they don't anticipate a quick sellout. I think they just don't put all the tickets on sale right away, maybe just to produce the perception to the ticket buyer that, you know, to not make it look like there's an abundance of tickets available, just to try to make it look like there's a little bit of demand there is the only thing that I can surmise. But so all of that can change as far as that's what affects the capacity that WrestleTix ends up counting. These are the tickets that have been put on sale, not necessarily all the tickets that could be put on sale. That ends up being different. And then finally, the finalized number of tickets that are or could be put on sale will change as the actual date of the event happens. So anyway, thoughts on these ticket sales? We've got still, you know, July 2nd is Money in the Bank. July 30th is SummerSlam. September, I believe it's 3rd. I wrote 30th on here, which is incorrect. But Clash of the Castle, I would be happy with that. Money in the Bank, is it going to get a lot higher? We still got more than a month here to go on Money in the Bank. You're going to end up selling probably at least twice as many tickets as you would sell in an arena. I don't know what the pricing is like for these tickets, it probably ends up making it worth it. I'm sure the production of these events is going to be more expensive because it's at a stadium. If nothing else, it's probably just more expensive to get into a stadium before you end up perhaps creating a more elaborate production in a stadium.
I mean, I think as far as like Money in the Bank, I mean, I just hope that it is a different experience for those fans in Allegiant Stadium than it was for SummerSlam 2021, as far as the machines and all that. But
the machines,
with SummerSlam,
what happened at SummerSlam?
The credit card machines stopped working, and then they couldn't serve concessions and including water.
Okay.
And then with SummerSlam, I've noticed that there's other events that are now attaching themselves to that weekend. And I think that does help draw a small number of people. Oh, let's make a weekend of it. Let's also buy tickets to SummerSlam. And I think you'll probably see that increase next coming weeks. I think the next day after is Ric Flair's last match. They're promoting it at StarCast and stuff. So
I wondered if you're going to bring this up.
Yeah. So I would think that
you're going to be attending Ric Flair's last match.
I am not, but I have a friend that will most likely be producing it.
Is he? Okay. Yeah. Ricky Steamboat reportedly rumored to be involved, but clarifying that he is not involved. He will not be involved in Ric Flair's last match. I saw a headline somewhere earlier today. I think it was on the Torch site. Ric Flair claims that 40 doctors have approved him, have cleared him, or something like that. I'm surprised he didn't claim 93,179 or something. Yes, I've become a big proponent of late of retiring with dignity. But anyway. Oh, here we go. We've got a statement from WWE that came out Monday night. It reads, I'll read it to you since you can't read it. When Sasha Banks, this is from WWE. When Sasha, this is on W.com. When WWE and Naomi arrived at the arena this afternoon, this is, again, Monday, they were informed of their participation in the main event of tonight's Monday Night Raw. During the broadcast, they walked into WWE head of talent relations, John Laurinaitis' office, with their suitcases in hand, placed their tag team championship belts on his desk, and walked out. They claimed they weren't respected enough as tag team champions, and even though they had 8 hours to rehearse and construct their match, they claimed they were uncomfortable in the ring with two of their opponents, even though they'd had matches with those individuals in the past with no consequence. Monday Night Raw is a scripted live TV show whose characters are expected to perform the requirements of their contract. We regret we were unable to deliver as advertised tonight's main event. That statement from WWE. And then on Friday night, it is now Sunday as we record this. And then on Friday night, Pat McAfee made some faces as Michael Cole read this statement, which we'll play now.
The WWE Women's Tag Team Champions walked off the show and walked out of the building during Monday Night Raw. They were supposed to take part in this, the main event, the six-pack challenge, where the winner would be next in line to face Bianca Belair for the Raw Women's Championship. However, Sasha and Naomi took the tag team championships into the office of our head of talent relations, left them there, and then promptly walked out of the arena. Their actions disappointed millions of WWE fans and their fellow superstars. So because of what Sasha and Naomi did this past Monday night, they have been suspended indefinitely. And we will have a future tournament to crown the new WWE Women's Tag Team Champions.
There we have it. Michael Cole doing the dirty work there. I did watch this a few times, and he does. I'm like, how did he do this? Was there just somebody in his ear? No, he's reading from something on his desk. Pat, Matt, have you seen this clip before today?
Yeah.
They posted it to their Twitter account too. We have our friend David Bixon's fan on Twitter pointing out, this is the face you make when you realize you work for Pravda Sports Entertainment. I don't know that. And Pat McAfee did say as they were transitioning to the entrances that they were, you know, for the match that was following, he did make a comment sort of saying, "All right," but I don't read that much into Pat McAfee being Pat McAfee and just making a bunch of faces.
Well, you got to remember though, he wasn't a players' union, so I think he would always probably truthfully be on the side of, you know, the players at this point, that this thing, the talent, you know.
Maybe. Who knows? Anyway, I I think there might be a real opportunity for WWE to put out their own news publication. Are you familiar with Pravda?
Not really. I've heard the term a couple times, but...
It's too bad that your laptop's not working. I would have you go to pravda.ru and read a few headlines out of there. Pravda is a publication that was founded in the early 20th century by the Russian Communist Party, but it still exists today, and they still love Putin. Perhaps there's an opportunity for WWE to do something similar. I think they could produce some really great headlines such as this, perhaps. But they also, at the same time that that announcement was made, I don't know if the timing was exact, but at least on that day, people realized that you can't find Sasha Banks merchandise on W Shop. You can't find Naomi merchandise on W Shop. So they pulled their merchandise. John Pollock has a really good article on postwrestling.com discussing this story and all the issues, among other things, pointing out that there's a match with Sasha Banks herself on SummerSlam. That was among the biggest matches on that card, which is one of the biggest cards of the year for WWE. Sasha Banks was advertised to wrestle Bianca Belair at SummerSlam, advertised right up to the moment before the match went to the ring. They were playing video packages promoting the event. This is, of course, where Becky Lynch comes back. Sasha Banks was unable to appear for reasons that I think have not been publicly disclosed. But... they advertised that match and then it didn't deliver it. Pretty similar to, I don't know, was the six-pack challenge match even advertised? I'm not sure. But I'm sure people were not anticipating, whatever the case, I'm sure people were not anticipating the six-pack challenge match as much as people might have been anticipating the Sasha Banks versus Bianca Belair match at SummerSlam, which was advertised and, deliberately not delivered by WWE when they could have announced that Sasha Banks was not going to be participating in the event, and any amount of time they could have announced that in advance of the match that they weren't going to deliver. So there's that. Any thoughts about summarily unprofessional behavior you'd like to make here? Chris Gull, you're familiar with that.
I got a few. I think we can both think that the statement was weird, that there was a public statement made and then they're continuing with this, on SmackDown making the statement. We have seen unprofessional behavior on WWE television multiple times. Maybe not WWE television whole, but WWE television and events multiple times in the last 12 to 18 months. We had the Charlotte and Becky incident. No statement. We had Jeff Hardy walking out on a house show. I believe no statement, or at least no mention of it on television. I mean, those two first just did come to mind with this. Oh, we had the Nia Jax, Charlotte shoot, pretty much happening in
the UWFI rules match. Yeah.
And we had no statement or no mention of the reality of it on television. So I think that has to be put into question of why they would make this statement.
Well, I think the difference is that these were workers using the only means of leverage that they really have, which is their physical presence and physical participation in the content, in the matches. And they were using that, that little power that they have. Charlotte, Nia Jax, I forget what other examples you were mentioning there.
Becky, Jeff Hardy.
Right. And any of those, I guess maybe, I don't know what was going on with Jeff Hardy, but they decided that they weren't happy with something and they walked out. Charlotte did not walk out, I don't want to speculate too far because I don't know all the details of what his problems were, but yeah.
But this can kind of segue in though. Sasha Banks is a big star for them, I think, and just being at a live event recently at Raw, like the crowd pop for her and Naomi was absolutely crazy. But I see you're going to go into the Google Trends room. We actually had a super chat here from Sajizzle. Would you all look into Sasha's ratings, power over the years, important data in this labor struggle? So I think this is where we're going to kind of discuss a little bit, at least the Google trends and all that.
Yeah, and we did do the video a couple weeks ago on everything in April, all the quarter hours and all the YouTube views and web search in April. That is on the WrestleNomics YouTube channel. Sasha did not register in that month, but that's just one month. But we do have here, the Google Trends for the last full 12 months, May 2021 to last month, April 2022. And she ends up being of, I believe the requirement for this query, let's call it, was that you had to have at least one match in that period, in that 12-month period. And what we end up with is Sasha Banks, the 10th most searched for wrestling personality who had a match. And would she would be the number two woman on this list behind Ronda Rousey. If web search tells you everything, which certainly it doesn't, but if web search is a reliable indicator of somebody's economic value, let's say, then I know we're only looking at 12 months here, but from studying this stuff for a long time, she's outperformed Charlotte for a long time, and I would say it's not really arguable to me that Charlotte has been more heavily pushed than Sasha Banks, and I don't really know what the good reason is why, other than maybe Charlotte is related to a wrestler, or maybe Vince sees Sasha Banks as injury prone, I don't know, or too small, but yeah, she's been very highly ranked on this list for what it's worth. Web search does not indicate anything about revenue, but maybe it suggests something about it. But people ahead of her are only Rey Mysterio, Goldberg, Randy Orton, CM Punk, Steve Austin, Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, and number one, doubling Roman Reigns just about, John Cena, who did have some matches in the last 12 months. So yeah, Sasha Banks is no small star to them.
She's also a crossover star too. She appeared in The Mandalorian for a couple episodes, and like her acting career.
You wouldn't know it by watching WWE programming.
No,
she hasn't.
No, not at all.
Yeah, have you watched that stuff?
Yes, a big Mandalorian fan. She was great in it.
Yeah, and there's a. Reports that maybe their contracts are coming up soon. Maybe for one of them, their contracts is coming up soon. I have no idea personally, but maybe that's playing into this as well. Apparently, they were unhappy with the plans for the direction that the women's tag titles were going in. Apparently, they were going to one was going to pin the other in this six-pack challenge match, and then they were going to go on to wrestle the different women's champions for the two brands. They were unhappy with this. Various reports about talent's reaction to this. Are they just being marked for the belt? I would speculate what happened here is that they are advocates for the tag division, for the women's tag division, and it wasn't meeting what they wanted it to be. And perhaps they had been promised that it would be something. It would be treated with more importance, and they saw whatever the creative plans were here on Monday, they saw that as a sign that it was not going to meet what they expected or what they hoped.
And to just add to that point, they announced that tournament, and Sean Ross Sapp pointed out that there is only two active women's tag teams.
Now, they'll slap some teams together, you know.
on the roster.
Yeah. There are, to my view, you know, there are more important things I think to be unhappy about. If I were Sasha Banks, and just based on the limited information that I see, I would be unhappy about not being pushed harder, not being promoted more heavily, more in the line or beyond Charlotte, because I think Sasha Banks is a more I don't know if popular is the word, but a more marketable, more valuable star than Charlotte Flair is, and I don't know. I don't know why she hasn't been pushed to the same degree. But anyway. we'll see what happens. In the past, people's contracts have been frozen. Mustafa Ali was another person who decided that he didn't like what they were doing with him, and he tried to get his release. These two have not yet reportedly asked for their releases, but who knows what will unfold here. Mustafa Ali did end up coming back to TV. He's currently on TV. CM Punk, memorably, in 2014, went home, took his ball and went home. Steve Austin, the original taker of balls to go home. I did rewatch the Confidential episode where JR and Vince bury the hell out of Steve Austin for taking his ball and going home in, what is it, 2002. Vince calls walking out the unforgivable sin in our business. So you can see if that's the way that Vince felt about Austin leaving in 2002, that he would feel pretty strongly about this happening as well. I think that's what's largely behind, I would guess, what's largely behind this emotional press release that they put out on Monday night. Yes.
I was just saying on Twitter this morning, Jesse Collins, who always does an awesome job filling in for me, by the way, put a post that it'd be interesting to see if the fans revolt against this and we start seeing Sasha chants in the arena, much like we were getting Punk chants in 2014 and for years following that.
Yeah, I don't know. They let down the W Universe, though. And I think, maybe I would be somewhat surprised, Punk represented more of a rebellious perspective in wrestling fandom that, Sasha Banks, for her star power, does not. And I think that's somewhat what was behind that. But we'll see. Any other points to make here?
Like I said, I think the statement took me for surprise. We talked about it before when, Tony Khan made the comments about Big Swole, probably not the best move. I'm going to say the same thing about this for WWE. Same, not the best move doing this.
I guess something that's crossed my mind related to the story is that, if I were them, I would definitely, and maybe they already do have agents, I would definitely want to get some advice from lawyers who have my interests at heart about what I need to be worried about, what I need to do and not do in this situation. I don't know. We'll see. Their side of the story hasn't been told yet, so I don't know if it's advisable for them to do so or what. But I wouldn't be surprised either to see the situation resolved. That was my feeling on Tuesday morning. Somebody in the broader media world asked me if this was a work or not, and I said, no, this is not a work. I explained why I think it's not a work, and I said that, I think this will pass. They'll resolve this. I'm less sure now, especially after they were kind of buried on Friday.
We have to point out the fact that both their spouses are employed by WWE.
Is Sasha Banks' spouse employed by WWE?
Yeah, he is in the gear making wardrobe.
You sure he's employed by WWE?
Or maybe he's an independent contractor.
Okay. I know he
was at one point. I believe he still is. I could be wrong on that, but we never heard his name on a release or anything.
But Naomi is married to one of the Usos. I don't know which one. One of the Usos, though. Who went out and had a match immediately after that announcement. But anyway. Alrighty. And just to close, we do through various means of research over the years, we now have a more complete picture, or at least I have a more complete picture, of WWE's annual revenue. This is through records from the Ohio Secretary of State, through some records from legal filings. Are you familiar with the Albert Patterson of WF Superstars fame? Superstars of Wrestling fame, I should say.
I'm kind of mad that I don't know that, because I like all the obscure
I may be wrestlers. Getting some of the details wrong. If I am, Bix will correct me. There's So obviously the WF had a program called Superstars for many years. I think originally it was called Superstars of Wrestling because that's what initiated the litigation. There's another wrestling promoter named Albert Patterson who claimed to have, I don't know if he claimed to have the trademark on that, but had prior use. Sued WWE over this, is my understanding. And so WF ended up no longer calling it Superstars of Wrestling, and maybe they had to settle with Albert Patterson. Anyway, because of that litigation, we got some information about what kind of money WF at the time was generating. And so we have this. So we have this going all the way back to 1984. So this is like just before WrestleMania, the first WrestleMania. And I adjusted this all for inflation. And we are missing 1992. Ohio Secretary of State either lost it or damaged it. But we're missing 1 year. But we do have every year of revenue with maybe different accounting methods through the years. And we do have different fiscal years because WWE changed its fiscal year in 2007 to become the calendar year, ending in December as opposed to ending in April, which is when it ended previously. And then some of these other records are from U.S. tax returns, apparently, so they reflect the calendar year. Anyway, adjusted for inflation, WWE is still by far making the most money it ever made. No, WWF did not make more money in the Hulkamania era by any indication here. You go look back in the 80s, we do have at least the late 80s here, where they were making in today's dollars, still less than in their best year in today's dollars, and was 89, where they made $122 million in real-time money, which is the equivalent of today, about $229 million. So by 1999, they were exceeding that. So we could say that, and look, a lot of this just has to do with the revenue opportunities that were available at the time. Maybe licensing in the 80s was not what it was in the 90s and in the early 2000s. I would think that that's the case. And maybe merchandise hadn't evolved to the point that it later evolved to. But we could say, just in terms of revenue, the Attitude Era generated more revenue than the Hulkamania era. Certainly adjusted for inflation, it did. But now, today, with all the guaranteed money resources that they have, the TV licensing deals that they have, the Saudi Arabia licensing deal that they have, they're making more money than ever, even adjusted for inflation. I mean, this is many, many times the amount of revenue that they were generating in the 80s, right? I'm estimating about $1.2 billion, maybe $1.3 billion of revenue in 2022, which is not out of the realm of what stock analysts are estimating. And that's in today's dollars, obviously. If you go back to the 80s, I mean, the best year in the 80s was 89, where they generated the equivalent of $229 million. So that's, that's more than, it's not 10 times, but it's, what is that? About six times the revenue of the best year of the 80s. The best year of the 90s, well, let's say 2001 was the best year of what we might call the Attitude Era, if you want to go that far. It is ending April 2001, so that was $658 million in today's money. That's about half of what they'll generate this year. So there you have it. That's all. Anything else to add or to say?
I think Sean Ross mentioned that OVW has signed a deal with one of the three major streaming services of Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon, but we have not found out who that is, so it'd be interesting to see what that is. There is a lot of wrestling on Amazon Prime, so that would be my guess. If you look for it, it's there. Well, I don't know how featured.
Fightful has reported that they asked Hulu and they asked Amazon Prime, I believe. And both denied. Netflix did not deny.
So, perhaps that would be very interesting to see. So,
yeah, I'm going to assign you to watch some episodes of OVW and report back next week.
I'm sure we'll get tagged in a Twitter post by Jesse Goddard's once it's official. Okay. the TV deal. So,
okay. That's all I have. If you hit like, share, subscribe, that really helps us. patreon.com/WrestleNomics. I have all the TV ratings information nearly every day. There's a TV ratings update in addition to other information. And you can follow Chris Gullo too.
Yeah, follow me at Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Chris Gullo, Rediscovering the Indies. The Burr Prentice episode has been getting a lot of great feedback by some interesting individuals, which I'll tell you off the air, Brandon. But you should listen to it as well, RTI Pod. And once again, folks, I really apologize for the technical difficulties. Brandon can tell you, as of 10:55, my laptop was working. I did a reboot just to make sure we were good, and now it's not turning out.
I told you to reboot.
Hopefully, it's not dead.
That you hate to reboot. You say it. You told me you hate rebooting, and I said, do it anyway.
I do. So hopefully it's not dead, and if not, we'll figure something out by next week.
Hopefully. He sounded okay to me. We'll see. And then the podcast edition should be fine either way. All right. So thanks to everybody for listening and tuning in. Thanks for the super chats. Thanks to Post Wrestling for being our podcast distribution partner. And we'll talk to everybody next time at Sunday at 11 Eastern. Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.